Let's talk for a few minutes about Yom Kippur and about Sukkot. So let's touch on a handful of the highlights. I mentioned yesterday, Lefnei Hashem Tetaru, a pasuk that escorts us throughout the davening of Yom Kippur. I mentioned yesterday, Ben Yon understands that it is a tzivui, that it's not just a description of fact, but it's a command for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you shall be mitar yourself. Ben Yon understands that means specifically be mitar yourself from your averus. That's where Ben Yon understands that there's a separate mitzvah of tshuva, aside from the general mitzvah of tshuva b'chal hashana, there's a separate mitzvah of Nei Hashem Tetaru of tshuva Yom HaKippur. Rav Sadia Gaon understood that Nei Hashem Tetaru is a tzivui, but not a tzivui for tahara from chet, a tzivui for tahara from Tumah. And that's why going to mikvah Erev Yom Kippur is more significant than going to mikvah Erev Rosh Hashanah or other Arve Yomim Tovim or Shabbosos. Going to mikvah Erev Shabbos is not exclusively Chesed Shemitah, which the Chayyadim talks about as well. There's Litvish bona fides are beyond reproach. They're different Menhagim and Klal Yisrael. About going to Mikra Erev Shabbos, going to Mikra Erev Yom Tov, Erev Rosh Hashanah is even more widespread. Erev Yom Kippur, in addition to being a chalik of the Hachana for Tshuva, and a chalik of Yimei Hadin, which Erev Yom Kippur shares with Erev Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah go and understood, Lefnei Hashem Tetaru is Mamash at Tzivoy. It's Tzivoy to be Matar oneself, and cannot be Matar oneself from Tumas Meis without Efer Paraduma, but other Tumas you can removed through going to mikvah. So it's ideal when it's going to go to mikvah. It depends on the community. You may not have the option. If you have the option to go into a mikvah that's actually a kosher mikvah, particularly Erev Yom Kippur, that is ideal. And then there's the other approach to Lefnei Hashem Tetaru, or other set of approaches, is that it's not a tzivui, but rather it's a havtacha. It's not like Rabbeinu Yonah or Rav Sadia Gaon that's giving instructions. You must be matar yourself from chet, you must be matar yourself from tumah. But rather, it's a apipshuto. It's a haftacha. Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, "You will, not you shall, but you will become tahar over the course of Yom Kippur." That's what the Mishnayos discuss. The last parak of Maseches Yuma. There are 8 parak Maseches Yuma. The first 7 are chronological and are about the part of Hilchos Yom Kippur that we look forward to. Klal Yisrael be mekayim with the return of the Beis Hamikdash. The first 7 parak about Davos. Very fascinating, incredibly unique. All sorts of unique features to the Avodas Yom Kippurim. It is Kachim, but it has all sorts of unique features, unique dimensions, most obvious of which is the fact that you need Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol goes the fly from the flim, and that he wears the Big Day Lavan. And we'll have a chance to talk about that, if not be Mekayimit, Harry Banabes HaMikdash. We don't yet have an operational Beis HaMikdash by this coming Yom Kippur. So in the middle of Musaf, there are various piyutim, the piyutim of the Avodah, where we'll have a chance to talk about it. If you say a Zeh Makom on a regular basis, you talk about it in brief. Every time you begin a Zeh Makom, the first mission is about the power of Tzar Shem Kippurim, where we describe that these were Chatos HaPinyos, is from the unique list of the Karbonos Chav. Most Karbonos stay totally outside the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, there was a building, the Heichal Makosh Kadashim, various rooms, surrounded by an open-air space, and the Mishkan is called the Chatzer, and the Beis HaMikdash is called the Azara, and that open-air space, that open-air courtyard that surrounded the building, the Beis HaMikdash, that's where the vast majority of Avodas HaKarbanos took place. A handful of Karbanos, where you actually take the blood inside the building, the Parvus Sar Shal Yom HaKippurim, now it goes inside the building, because Kadosh, he takes it into the innermost room, into Kodesh HaKadoshim, where in the first Beis HaMikdash, where the Aron was, that's the opening mission of Ezeh Makom. We talk a little bit about it. The blood is applied, he sprinkles in the blood, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he steps outside, sprinkling the blood against the paroches, that separates the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the Kodesh, and then finally sprinkling the blood, applying the blood to the golden Mizbeach HaKtores that was inside that building in the Heichal as well. The first 7 prakim describe the Avodah. And then the last parak of Maseches Yuma is the one that holds all the halacha l'maisa b'zman hazeh. So it starts with the halachas of fasting, and that branches out to various topics, but the fasting and the other inuim, the total of chamish inuim. And then towards the end, the Mishnahs turn towards the halachas of kaparas avonos, which we began to talk about a little bit yesterday. It's interesting to think that the halachas of kaparas avonos, the Mishnahs describe. The din we spoke about yesterday, actually, Pais is Chaver, but Avesh Maram Chaver, you need Pius. Mishnahs talk about the Rambam quotes at length. The Dalet Chiluki Kapar, we divide all violations of halacha into four different tiers. And how much you need in order to get kapara depends on what tier you're in. A lower tier, you just need tshuva. The second tier, you need tshuva and Yom Kippur. And sometimes you need the top two tiers, you need even more Yom Kippur. Tshuva plays a role, Yom Kippur plays a role, but you're going to need even more than that in order to get kapara savanos. But the Gemara goes on to say, this idea that Yom Kippur plays a role, either is what does the trick, or at least plays a role in Kapara Savanos, the Gemara uses this language, that Itzumo Shel Yom Mechaper, the Etzem day, the day itself creates Kapara. It's a fascinating idea. That's that the line we mentioned the other week, that the Rav used to share with Talmidim in the Shir, and I think he appears in Halachic Man, writing Halachic Man, the Ewan Yom Kippur, he remembered distinctly as a child, his father took him outside, Yom Kippur, late Yom Kippur afternoon, and says, Yashadar, you see that sunset? That sunset is not like any other sunset of the whole year. That sunset is Mechaper Avonos. So the Rav said that was very formative in terms of his thinking, what he describes analytically in Halachic Man, that a Lamdan sees physical reality through the prism of and the categories of the Halacha. You don't just see a burbling spring, you do see a beautiful burbling spring, and you also see a mayan. You see a din mayan coming out of the ground. That the halacha gives us a set of categories with which to look at, appreciate, and analyze the world. And he began to, a formative moment in developing that perspective. His father said, that sunset, it's a beautiful sunset like yesterday's and tomorrow's, but it has unique halacha qualities. Every sunset brings Safik Laila, every week sunset brings Shabbos, every week sunset begins the process of Shabbos leaving. This sunset is Mechaper Avonos. But what does that mean? It's not the sun, obviously. That's Mechaper Avonos. The sunset marks the fact that that's the moment when the Kaparas Avonos is driven at the Wipat Gemara's discussion. We assume it Besof Hayom. But what's the mechanism? It's Sumo Shayom Mechaper. So Rav develops very beautifully, very lyrically, I think over a series of drushes, that it lies in this pasuk, Lefnei Hashem Tetaru, that the Tahara of the Tahara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides, Afkai Tetamalka, so to speak, the Tahara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides of Kaparas Avos Yom Kippur comes from being Lefnei Hashem. That same terminology, Lefnei Hashem, that we had in the context of Tefillah, the being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amida Lefnei Hashem, the same terminology that appears throughout Chumash, particularly in Chumash Devarim, I believe, to describe Lefnei Hashem in Chumash usually describes being in the Mikdash. You eat Karbanos Lefnei Hashem, you eat Ma'aser Sheni, and so on, so various V'chaltem Shem Lefnei Hashem Elokecha, Ma'aser Degancha, Tirosh Chavitzarecha, and so on and so forth. It's being in various levels of Kedushas HaMikdash, being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I mean Lefnei Hashem Tetaru, the Kohen Gadol goes Lefnei V'Lefnim. No other Jew is Mechiv to be in Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah is described, practically speaking, it's obviously a very meaningful day to come to Beis HaMikdash, and the Mishnah is described that the crowd in Beis HaMikdash was literally standing room only. The Mishnah described that once you found your spot, you were stuck there for the day. There were different things that happened in different parts of the Azara over the course of the day. The Kohen Gadol was moving around from place to place. There were Karbanos to take care of over here, and there was laning to take care of over there, and so on and so forth. The Kohen Gadol was able to move around. If you were in the audience, it was so packed, the Mishnah say, that you picked your spot probably early in the morning, the night before, and that's where you're going to be over the course of Yom Kippur. You would get to see this, you wouldn't get to see that. So the many, many, many enormous numbers of Jews came to Beis Hamikdash, but no one's mechuyev to come to Beis Hamikdash. It's not with the Shal Shrugalim. So let me look near Hashem to Taru. If I'm not in Beis Hamikdash, I don't get Tahara. So the Rav explained very lyrically that the Tahara comes from, so to speak, rubbing shoulders with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our neshama, so to speak, scrubbing up, metaphorically speaking only, against the Ribbono Shel Olam. In the sense, not in a geographical sense, you're not mechuyev to be in any particular place, gevaldik to be in Beis HaMikdash, gevaldik if not, to be in Shul. We'll talk about exceptions about to that in a moment. But to go back to where we began this conversation a couple of weeks ago, the Torah opens Hilchos Rosh Hashanah with a medrash about how the 40 days of Elul into Aseres Mei, 39, 40 days of Elul into Aseres Mei Tshuva, that goes back to the original success at achieving Kaparas Hatzibur. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes up for the third time on Har Sinai, and comes down with the Yigdal Midas Harachamim, and with Halachti Kedvarecha, and with the second set of Luchos, which was a visceral, physical expression of Kadosh Baruch Hu giving us a second chance. Renewing the relationship and giving us a second chance, and he continues to be invested in us. That was El Aseres of Seres made sure with this whole period of Moshe Rabbeinu's third round on Har Sinai is an elevated time of Kirvas Elokim. As we mentioned, the Gemara in Yevamos and Rosh Hashanah says there's an even more elevated level of Kirvas Elokim. Dirushu Hashem Behi Matzao, the Gemara says, the time that he's Benimsa, specifically Asar Yamim, Shebein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah presumably is even more than the rest of Aseres Mei Tshuva, and the highest level of Kirvas Elokim, sort of climbing this mountain, is Yom Kippur. Lefnei Hashem Tetaru, that every Jew has this exceptional level of Kirvas Elokim, more than the rest of the Elul Aseres Mei Tshuva period, more than the rest of Aseres Mei Tshuva. And it's that Kirvas Elokim, it's the coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously not physically, not geographically, but it's the elevated level of intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the course of Yom Kippur, that's what creates, Lefnei Hashem, that creates, that causes the Tetaru. The Tahara comes from, so to speak, being close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the course of Yom Kippur. As I mentioned before, the beginning and the bulk of the Perek Yom Kippur, the last Perek of Yuma, is about the fasting and the other Inuyim. And I mentioned before the Mishnayos branch broadly. The Mishnayos branch into a discussion of Pikuach Nefesh in particular. That's fascinating. The Mishnayos and the Gemara have a several blot about the Dinam Pikuach Nefesh. Even in the Mishnayos, it's not limited to just Pikuach Nefesh and Yom Kippur. The Mishnayos right start to talk about Pikuach Nefesh vis-a-vis in Machalos Asuras any time of the year. And the Mishnayos seem to talk about Pikuach Nefesh in terms of Melacha. Melachas Yom Kippur or Melachas Shabbos. What happens when Rachmanis Lan ability collapses on Shabbos, and so on and so forth. And the many of the principles, probably in the Mishnayos, is probably the primary address for Pikuach Nefesh. Certainly in the Mishnayos, and perhaps in Gemara, it's certainly one of, it's not the major, one of the major addresses in Shas. The Halachas Pikuach Nefesh is the last parak of Maseches Yuma. Pei Beis, Pei Gimel. A lot of the major principles that apply far beyond Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur is the address for Pikuach Nefesh in general. So that's important to keep in mind. There could be various reasons why Chazal chose to do that. Perhaps part of it is to address a practical problem, which is that I think, empirically speaking, to violate, for a Jew as a Yarei Shamayim, to violate the din, Laman Pikuach Nefesh could be very, 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 very emotionally, very hard. I've trained myself all these years not to be Mechal Shabbos, not to eat Tarfas, not to eat Yom Kippur. And now I'm going to, at age XYZ, now I'm going to do that. So it is a Nisayon. And Rishon already pointed out that you got to be careful. And people sometimes misguidedly, the Rambam is particularly vociferous about this, sometimes people are misguidedly think that I'll be Machmir and not, and the doctor told me I have to eat XYZ, but I'm going to be Machmir and I'm not going to eat quite so much. I'm going to wait longer. The doctor told me as soon as you see this symptom or that symptom, you got to eat, but I'm going to wait, I'm going to be machmir. And then Rishonim pointed out, that's a terrible, horrific kula. That's the ultimate chumma da'asei de kula. If you're machmir Yom Kippur, we make on pikuach nefesh. That is absolutely wrong. Elamai, it is emotionally often difficult to violate what would normally be the din, l'man pikuach nefesh. And a Jew has to mitchasek and recognize that that emotional reaction is natural and normal and a yetzahara. And ultimately, we do mitzvahs because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do them. And if this year HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to eat instead of fasting, that's what you need. That's what you need to do. That's what you need to do. If you know of someone who does have a medical condition that may indicate eating, whether the concern of dehydration, a concern of vertigo, or a concern about blood sugar levels, or whatever else it may be, someone who's going through chemo, so hopefully they already discussed with their posek, with their doctor and their posek in tandem, how they should handle Yom Kippur, Chatzar Yosher Tov. If you know someone who may be in that situation and perhaps did not yet talk to their Mor Hara, you may want to, if you're in a position to with finesse, and make sure that that conversation happens, that would be a mitzvah rabba ad ma'od. A mitzvah rabba ad ma'od. Talk for a couple of moments. There's so much to say about Yom Kippur. We just scratched the surface. There's so much to say about Sukkos. We'll just scratch the surface there. The kashrus of the luv is probably taken care of by someone else, I imagine. Either the shul provides the luv, and it's wrong. They're already looked at by the rav, or else people in Eretz Yisrael, it's even more common minig than in America. People take their dalmin to show to Mor Hara. Sukkah, so we all know the basic dinim, but kedai probably to chazer. A sukkah has to have walls, at least 2.5 walls. The details of when you have less than a full 3 walls, what that looks like, it's a little bit complicated. A lot of complicated sukkahs in the beginning of a sukkah. The Rama is not such a fan of working with the incomplete walls. If you have a whole complete wall, 3 walls, 4 walls, then you know that you're more likely to be safe. The walls do not have to go all the way up to the schach. They do have to go at least up to 10 tefachim, which is approximately waist height for most of us. And if they're not going straight up to the schach, the schach has to be directly aligned, has to extend to the directly above the walls. You have to have kasher schach, which means not only it fits the basic 3 categories that everybody knows, but it has to grow from the ground, be no longer attached to the ground, and not be a kli, not be makabel tuma, which means it's neither food nor a kli. There are 4 categories of things in the world that are makabel tuma. Adam, kelim, ochel, and mashkim. Your schach is definitely not an adam, and your schach is definitely not a mashke. But your schach could be an ochel or a kli. So if a fellow is going to take a ladder, I have a wooden ladder. It's made out of wood, it's no longer attached to the ground, it's gevaldik, except that wooden ladder is a kli, it's makabel tuma. Or I have... If I'm going to load up, I'm short on schach, so I'm going to throw a lot of fruit onto the, throw a lot of celery on top of my schach, on top of my sukkah. That's a problem because that's makabel tum. That's an ochel. It's makabel tum. So that we know. The other thing, the opening Mishnah points, you also have to have enough schach. It's important not to be overly skimpy on the schach. It has to be chatzilasa, merubeh mechamasa. Part of it not being that the schach not growing from the ground is, that's maybe not the only reason, but one of the reasons why a tree, a live attached tree, a rooted tree is, or even a dead but rooted tree, is not kasher l'schach, which means that to build your sukkah under a tree is obviously, as the Mishnah points out, problematic. And this comes up l'maisa, you got to keep your eye, if many of us have sukkahs near trees. So near a tree is fine, but under a tree is not fine. So there are different ways to check that. Some people like using lasers, or you can just use your eyes, but you have to be careful about the following optical illusion. When you look, let's say the wall of this room was the wall of the sukkah. So oftentimes people will look from the side like this, and you look up at the tree, and typically it'll look worse than it actually is. Sometimes it looks better than it actually is, because you're looking from the trigonometry of it, you're looking from an angle. It's very hard to assess unless mamash stand along the wall of the sukkah and look straight up. If you're looking straight and not at an angle, then you can see does the tree actually protrude? Are there eaves of the roof that protrude? Eaves of the roof usually don't grow from year to year, unless you do construction. You can't just water your roof and get it to grow. Your trees obviously will grow from year to year. So if you have a sukkah in an area that's near trees, so you got to check from year to year. Usually every couple of years, you have to have a tree specialist come and trim it back. One issue that people that does come up that people are often unaware of is the din of tasev alam and asoi. The Gemara Darshan is the fact that the pasuk phrases the mitzvah of sukkah as chag sukkos ta'aseh lecha shevas yamim. Interesting phrasing. You should make a chag sukkos for yourself for 7 days. So one of the layers of meaning of that phrase, the Gemara says, is that the sukkah, not just the chag, but the sukkah has to be created through a ta'aseh. As opposed to what? As opposed to spontaneously generate sukkah? As opposed to, well, sort of. As opposed to below mina asa. The Gemara says ta'aseh. That becomes a phrase, even a Rosh Tevis. Sometimes you'll see, if you learn Hilchos Sukkah, which you definitely should, you'll see Tulma, Tetzvav Lamin Mem He. That stands for Ta'aseh Lo Min He Asui. You have to make the Sukkah, and not that it's from the Asui, from that which is already made. So what does that mean? That means you found the Sukkah. Now, what it usually means is the following. It means that the core, the halachic core of the sukkah is the schach. The word sukkah means a shade giver. So the schach is a primary element of the sukkah. You need to have walls as well. It won't be kosher without walls, but the primary and defining element of the sukkah is the schach. So when you lay the schach, when you place the schach, that has to be the action that creates a kosher sukkah. When you lay the schach, it's not a kosher sukkah, then later on something happens that now is machshir the sukkah sort of passively, that's min ha'asli. So for instance, let's say you build a frame, and then you put the schach on, you put the schach on first, and then you build the walls afterwards. So that's a problem of ta'aseh below min ha'asli. If you didn't yet have... Again, I said before, you don't necessarily have to have the walls going up to the top in order for it to be kosher. But if you didn't have kosher walls, you put down schach first, that's the problem of tasa, lom, and asa. You're not going to be able to tell later, obviously, because it's a historical issue. Once everything's up, it looks the same. And that's an important din to keep your eyes on. There is plenty, plenty more. Hilchos Sukkah breaks down, loosely speaking, as do many areas of halacha, into how to make the chefza and what you do with the chefza. The Dine HaChefza and the Dine HaMaisa. So we're talking just now a couple of brief highlights of the Dine HaChefza, of Asiyas HaSukkah, and there's plenty more to explore. In terms of the part that's even more relevant, because presumably your family probably already has a well-worked system, hopefully a well-worked and effective system, for how to build the sukkah in a way that's kosher and durable. Yeshiva B'Sukkah is an ongoing mitzvah, an ongoing something to keep your eyes on over the course of Yom Tov. As we know, the Gemara stresses that the core of the mitzvah Yeshiva B'Sukkah, that there the term that the verb the Torah uses is Teshvu. B'Sukkah is Teshvu Shivas Yamim. What do you mean Teshvu? So there's a Rambam in one place who makes it sound like one layer of that is that literally you're sitting in the Sukkah, but that's certainly not the primary meaning of Teshu. The primary meaning of Teshu, Gemara says, is Ke'en Taduru. Teshu means to live. Vayeshu b'kadesh amim rabim, I think is the pasuk that the Gemara quotes. It doesn't mean that they sat there in the desert for many years. It means they lived there for many years. Teshu, basukah is Teshu. That means you should live in your sukkah. Teshu Ke'en Taduru. So that's why the limitations based on Teshu Ke'en Taduru is you don't... You have no chiyuv to be in the sukkah if you wouldn't be in your house under the same circumstances. If it was dripping heavily into the dining room, you would probably move and eat in the basement or whatever. You would eat in the living room. You would figure out somewhere funny to eat rather than eating in the dining room with a heavy drip. That's why if it's raining, mitzvah patur min sukkah. That's the part of teshu kein tadur that limits the mitzvah. But at its core, teshu in kein tadur is what defines the range and the scope of the mitzvah. That's why the Tanaim say, ideally, you eat in the sukkah and you sleep in the sukkah, you learn the sukkah, and you're metayel in the sukkah. What does it mean to metayel in the sukkah? That's from the language of the Tanaim. A tiyul. You take it after a very big sukkah. Usually a tiyul is like you go on a hike for hours and hours. A tiyul. Right, but how? You mean you build a sukkah that covers an entire national park in Israel? That's probably not what Chazal had in mind. It sounds like an exciting idea. You'd love to be able to stop for your to have your sandwich anywhere. But
they have the hills, so you could just.
There you go. These are all possibilities. There you go. So potentially, alternatively, yes. Ah, good. Let's come back to that moment. Very good question. But first, let's figure out what teal means. So teal does not mean taking a trip. What teal does mean is having a good time. One way of having a good time is to go on a hike. I strongly encourage it. But in teal, Chazal uses it to mean more generally to relax, to hang out. That's a very, very important point. The goal is, the minimum shear is there certain foods that you're not allowed to eat outside of the sukkah. That's your base minimum. That you're not going to have a hamotzi or a significant amount of hamotzi and mazonos outside of the sukkah. Okay. That's the bare minimum. But the ideal mitzvah is that you live in your sukkah as much as possible. Where you live may determine how doable that is. You live in an urban setting, it may be harder to really live in your sukkah. Certainly when my mother was growing up on the Upper East Side, Upper West Side many, many decades ago, and everyone was schlepping, you know, there were a handful of sukkahs throughout the whole neighborhood, and everyone would carry the food, you know, go there, eat there, an apartment, the neighborhood sukkahs are often maybe not as rare, but hard to come by, so it's a lot harder to move in, to live in your sukkah. But if you live in a private home, and you have access to a backyard and a front yard, and you have your own private sukkah. So ideally, conversation to have with the parents, what they're comfortable with. Ideally, you want to, you use the sukkah instead of the house. Not for, the Shulchan Aruch is clear, the sukkah doesn't become your kitchen, and the sukkah doesn't become your bathroom. But the sukkah ideally does become your dining room, and your living room, and your den, and if possible, your bedroom. So sleeping in the sukkah sometimes has its own complexities. Ideally, one should. If the weather the last couple of days is any indication, we may be mitzdayer sleeping-wise throughout sukkahs. Hopefully not. It's a conversation to have with parents in terms of their comfort level with your safety outside. But if you're not going to sleep in the sukkah now, it's something to file away for the future when you have your own table and your own home and your own sukkah. You'll build the sukkah in a way that Mirtzishan, you'll be comfortable, whether or not it's Shalom Chutzal or it's sleeping in the sukkah, whatever the weather permits. But certainly, teal, eating and learning and be metayel in the sukkah, means guys come over, you get together with friends to play a game, to hang out, to shmooze, to whatever, that should happen in the sukkah. You're going to sit and watch a funny video, that should happen in the sukkah. If you're embarrassed to watch that video in the sukkah, then you should not be watching that video anywhere, any day of the year. And if you're comfortable, having fun and relaxing, that's what Chazal said. You're supposed to have fun and relax over the course of sukkahs in your sukkah. You can play a game with a friend, with a younger sibling, or an older sibling, whatever it is, that should have Scrabble and chess and Catan should happen in the sukkah. Whether you should play Catan at all or not, it's a norm. And does anyone ever finish the game? These are all deep, deep questions. But settlers of Catan, you're supposed to settle in your sukkah. Teishu came to do that. That is the mitzvah of that's the ideal mitzvah of Teishu came to do. The minimum, the bare minimum, is the certain achil and certain shena that you're not going to have outside the sukkah. But ideally, it's a rich, ambitious mitzvah of, to the extent that is reasonable, living in your sukkah, not making the scrambled eggs, but eating the scrambled eggs in the sukkah, not throwing out the scrambled eggs, the garbage goes outside. But the main living function of the home, to the extent feasible, move to the sukkah. You had asked before, Shmuel, about going on trips. That's a great question. So the Gemara already addresses, Holchei Drachim, if you're on a journey, so you are, you got to work out the details, but to a significant extent, Patur from sukkah. Because after all year long, as you're saying, all year long, if I was on a journey, I wouldn't go home for breakfast, lunch, or supper. So sukkah is also. I'm not going to go home as a sukkah. The sukkah doesn't have more chamer than the home. Moshe Feinstein, I believe, has a tshuva where he says he thinks that now they have this new concept of leisure trips on Chol Moed, which don't seem to have been a common reality until a couple of decades ago. Just the reality of transportation. Maybe you went for a hike and you came back, but no one was going, no one was jumping, they didn't have cars to jump into to drive and drive back the same day for a Chol Moed trip. So Moshe is uncomfortable with the idea of eating bread or mazonos outside of a sukkah on a Chol Moed trip, because I think his major argument is that's a totally discretionary trip. Now, who told you to go? Do I have the right? If there's a tzorech, I'm traveling to see a relative that needs a visit. I'm going somewhere for the second day of Yom Tov, something like that. Okay, that's real halachic drachim. I believe Moshe's argument is, who told you to go on a trip for a couple of hours and come back and be part yourself from sukkah? So some posts can say, it doesn't matter. L'maiser halachic drachim, and you're pater. I think the common practice in America is to follow Moshe's concern. And when you're on the road, either you figure out a way to build a kasher or sukkah on the road, if you really are ambitious, if you're a real outdoorsman, or you take along food, chachamei b'rosh, you take along things that are not chayiv in sukkah, and then you'll eat other things, and you get back home. There is a comment of the Bach. Bach points out that the tour, Bach is one of the commentaries in the tours we've already had the chance, Baruch Hashem, to see a little bit. Now, the tour, as we've seen, is a halachic work, the Rosh Hashan, or halachic compendium, and all of halachas nogeb is ma'azah. He does halach in the tour. He has a pirush on Chumash, in which he's very involved in non-halachic parts of Torah. But the Arba Turim is a halachic work. As Bach points out, there are at least three places where the tour all of a sudden gets deep into the machshava of a mitzvah, the tamei ha-mitzvah. And by sukkah in particular, there's a machlokas tanam, at least Reb Lezer of Akiva, whether l'man yedu darosechem ki besukkas or shafti, is that referred to the anani hakavod, or to physical wooden huts that the Jews built. The Torah takes a stand in the machlokas, which seems entirely non-halachic. So the Bach develops the idea, he says the three places where he sees the Torah getting very involved in time of dekra are tzitzis, tefillin, and sukkah. What do those three things have in common? A word. There's a four-letter word, Laman. Laman. The Torah says, Laman tiskeres yisim kol mitzvosai, Laman tiyatar shem beficha by tefillin, and Laman yed darosechem by sukkah. So Bach develops a fascinating theory. He says, "In when the Torah says, normally we pass in against Rabbi Shimon in the ninth paragraph of Metziah, that time of dekra is meaningful, but it's not a part of the halacha. It doesn't regulate the application of the din. And it's, of course, ideal to think about what the mitzvahs mean and why I'm doing them, but that's not part of mitzvah shrichas kavana. But the Bach thinks, if the Torah actually says, do this so that, leman, you will accomplish that, then it is part of the mitzvah. So he says, by those three mitzvahs, tzitzis, tefillin, mitzvahs by tefillin, and sukkah, he thinks kavana's time of dekra, the Bach thinks, is actually ma'ake. So whether or not we pass like the Bach that you're not yotze, tzitzis, tefillin, or sukkah, if you didn't have in mind time of dekra, but certainly, at the very least, is valuable and important to think about in the sukkah what it's all about. That Kadosh Baruch Hu took care of us. Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of nisim guluyim, like the Anani HaKavod, and perhaps, as Ramban and Bo points out, even more impressively is to notice that Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us with sukkos mamash. Notice that Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of that when things are working naturally, the nisim to start, that is also Kadosh Baruch Hu taking care of us. I leave you with two open questions. One is, you can work on over Yom Tov, and one maybe we'll work on after Yom Tov. You can work on over Yom Tov. Is there two things that we assume are connected? As a matter of fact, when I say these two things, you might even be surprised that they aren't just one thing. And that is, there was something special happened to Beis HaMikdash, Dafka and Sukkos. There was something special happened to Beis HaMikdash, Dafka and Sukkos. What do they pour on the Mizbeach? Every day of the year they're pouring wine on the Mizbeach in conjunction with various karbanos. On Sukkos only, this is the wine they're pouring water. Right? And what else does that relate to on Sukkos? A unique Sukkos activity in the Beis HaMikdash? Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Right? Obviously those go together. Simchas Beis HaShoeva was a celebration that led up to this unique mitzvah of Nisach HaMayim. And then you have to figure out why of all the mitzvahs in the Beis HaMikdash, only Nisach HaMayim warranted a good 60, 70, 80 hours of celebration. No other mitzvah. But here's what else is fascinating, is not all Rishonim agree that they are connected. If you look in the Rambam, you will find that he puts Nisach HaMayim and Simchas Beis HaShoeva in two different parts of the Mishnah Torah. I never meant it's for the Rambam. It seems like just they had Simchas Beis HaShoeva. Eventually, they had to stop because it was time for the Nisach HaMayim, next mitzvah, but not that one connected to the other. If you take a look at the Rambam end of Hilchos Lulav, you'll see that he has a very different understanding of what Simchas Beis HaShoeva is all about. Nothing to do with Nisach HaMayim in particular. You might, though, also be wondering, but Shoeva means drawing water. After all, that's what the Gemara says, the opening lines, the last parak of Sukkah. Until you take a look at Tosfos, at the beginning of the last parak of Sukkah, and the Rishalmi he quotes, and maybe Rashi is following the Bavli in understanding that Simchas Beis HaShoeva is connected and leads up to the Nisach HaMayim, while the Rambam might be quoting, following the Rishalmi, as he so often does, in understanding that Simchas Beis HaShoeva is, the word Shoeva doesn't relate to water. They were drawing something very different. It wasn't water that they were drawing at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. The water would come later. You take a look, you'll see, there seems to be very, very fascinating two different ways of looking at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. We haven't even touched on Simchas Torah, and perhaps when we come back from Yom Tov, that'll be our first sugya back, will be to, before we jump into Gittin Daf Beis, will be to look at the intriguing sugya that Rav Sternbach has a Gevaldika Kasha. He thinks that the whole minhag of Hakafa Simchas Torah should be an Isser Gomer. It's against the Mishnah Moy Katan. How is it mutter? Not about dancing on Shabbos Yom Tov. How is it mutter to have Hakafas? And in exploring that, we'll come to important insights into Yom Tovim in general, and Shmiyat Tzeres in particular, and that is to come. In a moment, we head down to the Beis HaMedrash.